Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, September 21st, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Virginia Stonkus and friends will be here to highlight the Rotary Youth Exchange. We'll get an overview of Catholic Community Service of Juno with guest Robin Thomas. Kalara from Daughters of the New Moon will be here with details about an upcoming Turkish dance class or workshop, and we'll get a preview of Wednesday's League of Women Voters Municipal Candidate Forum at the Assembly Chambers. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. What was supposed to be a celebration over the weekend for a land settlement deal turned ugly when a protester accidentally set himself on fire. The incident happened in Ipperwash, Ontario, Canada. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
Ipperwash Provincial Park was the site of a protest 20 years ago in which police shot and killed protester Dudley George. He was part of a splinter group from the local First Nations that occupied the park, claiming it contained a sacred burial ground. This weekend, his brother, Pierre George, was injured when he accidentally set himself on fire while pouring gasoline on a fire that had been set by protesters. Pierre George was taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The Chippewas of Kettle and Stony Point First Nation have ratified an agreement that includes a financial settlement of more than $90 million, as well as the return of land appropriated by the Canadian government in 1942. Pierre George was injured while protesting against that settlement. Chief Thomas Brissett says 900 people voted on the settlement, and the results should have been respected.
Their elders wanted to come home today, and I don't know why this erupted. We've got teachings. One of them is respect. I didn't see that here.
Brissett says now that the negotiation process is over, people in his community can begin to focus on healing, strengthening community relations, and working together to implement the terms of the agreement. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The chairman of the Sisseton-Wahpeton tribe in South Dakota was suspended by the tribal council recently after he imposed a rule calling for drug testing of all tribal employees. The chairman says he wants to combat drug problems. He was reinstated by the council after a lengthy meeting on Friday. Charles Michael Ray reports.
Sisseton-Wahpeton Tribal Chairman Bruce Renville says he decided to mandate drug tests for tribal employees after a number of incidents, including a group of tribal elders who asked the government to do more to combat drugs.
There's a number of factors that prompted me to call for the drug test. Early in the spring, when a meth pipe was found in one of the ladies' bathrooms in our administration building, there's been a number of babies born to our tribal members that have meth in their systems. I heard recently about a heroin overdose.
The tribal council voted to suspend Renville after his call for employee drug testing. On Friday, the council then reinstated Renville. Two tribal council representatives, Kevin Roberts and Keith Johnson, refused to comment on the matter. Chairman Bruce Renville says that while the tribe has an alcohol addiction program facility, there are few resources and no facility to deal with anyone addicted to drugs.
Finding the appropriate resources is always a challenge. It would be a challenge for us. It would be a challenge for any rural community in America that is having a serious drug problem.
Renville says the tribe has to do more to combat the drug problem. After being reinstated by the tribal council, he thanked his supporters through social media. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The Interior Department has approved to take land into trust for the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe, which gives the tribe the green light to construct and operate a casino in Taunton, Massachusetts. About 170 acres of land on Cape Cod in the town of Mashpee and about 150 acres of land in the city of Taunton will be held in trust. Chairman Cedric Cromwell and city and state officials held a press conference today to discuss casino plans. The tribe received federal recognition status in 2007 and has since worked on building the casino. Former Chickasaw Nation Governor Overton James passed away last week at the age of 90. He was leader from 1963 to 1987 and helped move the Oklahoma tribe out from under federal government control into the self-governance era. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support provided by the National Indian Education Association's 46th Annual Convention and Trade Show in Portland, Oregon, October 14 through 17. All participants, vendors, and exhibitors welcome to register at niea.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 21st, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. And I have a whole crew of folks here who are representing the Rotary Youth Exchange in one way or another. Over on my left, listeners, wherever you happen to be, is Dan Dawson. He's the YEO, or the Youth Exchange Officer, for Glacier Valley Rotary. Is that correct, Dan?
That is correct, yeah.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. And next to him is Virginia Stonka. She is the same, right, YEO?
Correct.
But for Juno Downtown?
That's correct.
All right. Welcome to the show. All right, Rifki.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. Will you say your name for me, please?
Rifki.
And last name?
Rifki Zulfahmi.
All right. And you're in from Indonesia, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And you've been here for about a month.
Yeah, about a month.
Okay, well, we'll be interested in hearing more about that in a second. And Rebecca Miller, are you born and raised Juno?
No, I actually was... I'm from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I moved around all over the United States, and then I moved to Juneau.
And you recently spent a year in Finland.
Yep.
And it sounds like you're very excited about your experience.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
Sounds good. And all the way on my right is Mara Stalin. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, that's right.
And Nisei? Nisei?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
All right, and he's from Belgium. He's been here about a month. So welcome all of you to a Juneau Afternoon. It's nice to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll start with you, Dan, or you, Virginia, and just give us sort of the foundation of Rotary and how the Youth Exchange came to be.
The first Rotary Exchange started back in the 20s, and I believe Australia was one of the first countries to start it. But today, there are 1.2 million Rotarians around the world, and Juno has three Rotary clubs. The state has about 25 Rotary clubs. Most of which do an exchange. Our exchanges are country to country and district to district. So if Juno sends a student to a particular district in a country, that district then exchanges with us. Juno's been exchanging for as long as I can remember.
Okay, and I think I've, in the past I've seen that sometimes you'll send groups to certain places, and it sounds like here we have individuals. Is that true?
Each Rotary Club will be hosting one outbound and one inbound. Our outbounds are what I'm recruiting for right now, the students who will be selecting to go abroad. We can send more. It's usually because of finances. It's one student per club that we do. But all three clubs collaborate on that recruitment process as we go through, and we work with the high schools. We work with other organizations to get the word out, to see who's interested in applying for our program.
Okay, and Dan, maybe you can answer this. I know that Rotary is very philanthropic. You give to a lot of different causes. How does this fit into all of that?
Well, part of the Rotary Youth Exchange is we're hoping to better the world and give these high school students, a wider view of what's going on in the world and maybe help them understand, what needs to be done, what can be done.
Rebecca, is it working? Did you get a bigger world view?
Definitely. It definitely changed my world view, absolutely.
So you're in Finland for a year. Can you give us some highlights of your experience over there?
I lived about 2 miles from Russia. I was in a border town, so I lived in a town called Imatra, which is next to Svetogorsk, Russia. So I got to travel a lot with my family because gas is so much cheaper in Russia, so my family would just take me to Russia all the time. Like, they'd wake me up in the middle of the night and be like, we're going to go to Russia now. And so I got to go over the border and just, see a completely different... In Finland, everything's beautiful and clean. And in Russia, when you travel there, it's a completely different, perspective, things are a lot dirtier, things are cheaper. It's like a different culture within 5 minutes of each other. And I think that really changed my global perspective.
And had you had a chance to travel much before this?
Not really. When I was about five, I've been to Japan, and that was, I don't really remember much of that, but this is like my biggest thing I've ever traveled. I got to travel to 10 different countries while I was in Finland. So that was incredible.
All right. Marceline, tell us about, you've been here 1 month. What are some of your first impressions?
The weather in Juneau is quite similar to the weather in Belgium, so I'm not, it's not so different at that point. But I arrived here and the people are so, so welcoming, and that's great to be here because I've done so many things thanks to the Rotarians in my club, and I've met incredible people, and for the moment it's really amazing.
All right. Rifki, how about you? What are some of your first impressions?
So, in Juneau and Indonesia, it's very different. In my city, it's very hot, and I cannot handle it. It's very cold in here. I'm always freezing every day for 1 month. But people in here are so very nice, very good, and in Rotary Club is very like my family, you know. They are so nice. Yeah.
Virginia or Dan, you've been doing this for a long time. What are numbers like? How many folks do you help get here and send abroad?
Statewide, our average, I think we 22 Rotary Clubs around the state and Yukon Territory do exchanges. So for as long as I can remember, each Rotary Club in town has sponsored an inbound and sent an outbound. And one of the things that distinguishes, I think, the Rotary program from other exchange programs is it's not a travel experience per se. The students are on a student visa. They are expected to attend school while they're abroad. The other aspect that we look at, as Dan mentioned, is our students are not just students, they're ambassadors. The plan here is to select our students here, send them abroad, let them have a year to really immerse themselves in another culture, get to know the families, become part of that culture, which you do after a year. As Rebecca will tell you, she spoke no Finnish when she went abroad and came back as now a fluent Finnish speaker. The same with most of our other students who do that. So our expectation is that they have the face of you and me and our community and take that face abroad and make that be what the ambassadorial side is, and then they come back and share their new culture with us. So as Dan said, we kind of change the world one student at a time.
Rebecca, may I ask what year you are in school?
I'm a senior now.
Okay. How would you say that your time in Finland affected you, and how's it going to sculpt your future?
Kind of. It affected me in so many different ways. Oh, man, there's so many. It changed my global perspective absolutely completely. I feel more independent. I feel like I can do more and conquer more, and it changed, like, what I want to do with my future. I got to talk to the consulate a lot while I was in Finland and discuss with them about cultural differences and meet all these people from around the world, and it made me want to go into politics a lot more and to, you know, maybe work in a consulate or work as a diplomat and try and gain, like, so that people have more knowledge about other cultures and that we're all the same. And that kind of definitely shaped me since going abroad. And
okay. All right. Thank you. Marceline, I know it's only been 1 month, but how do you see this experience changing you?
I see it already, even if I've been here only for a month, I already see differences in myself. In Belgium, I didn't used to be introvert, but I mean here I'm much more extrovert, because I don't know anybody and I have to make a new life, make new friends, and if you don't go to people, if you don't talk to people, you will never spend an incredible year. So I've learned to be more extrovert and to speak more and to say thank you to the people, even if they do just a small thing for me, it's always incredible. So, yeah, I already see differences in myself.
How about you, Rifki?
So, this is like, even I'm just one, I mean, just 1 month, but I have so many. I can learn the language, the culture, and it changed me. You know, I'm more confident than in Indonesia. Yeah, I to be brave to talk. Even my English still bad, and yeah.
Virginia and Dan, is this what you're after?
That's exactly what we're after. I think the students that we are looking for are those who are definitely interested in wanting to grow, push themselves out of their comfort zone, take that next step, really reach out, and it is a life-altering experience. I mean, my daughter applied. This is how I got involved in this program 10 years ago, and I put her on the plane, and that was the hardest thing I'd ever done, is put my 16-year-old daughter on a plane. But a year later, this amazingly self-confident global world citizen stepped off the plane, and that was my hook to do whatever I could do to give as many kids as possible the chance to do this program. So we started recruiting in both high schools in the last 2 weeks. They can pick up applications if kids are interested in both the counseling offices at both Thunder Mountain High School and JDHS in Ms. Calvin's office. The applications are due by 4 o'clock, October 4th, Friday. There are several questions we ask them to fill out. We'll take those applications. Dan and all the other white YOs and I will sit down. We'll go through them. We will set up an interview schedule for the weekend of the 10th and the 11th of October. And within a week, we hope to have made our selections and contacted our students. And that's where we launch. This is almost a 3-year program. So we apply and recruit now. We have them for 8 months. We don't just select them and say, have a great year. We get them together, all the inbounds and the rebounds, soon to be outbounds, twice, so they can meet each other. We have folks that come in from the U.S. State Department who work with our diplomatic corps and Peace Corps to help with acculturation issues. So we have 4 days of training sessions to prepare these students, give them as many tools in their toolbox as they can use. We help them with 8 months of language, so what they find out in January, where they're going. So that gives them several months then to start learning the language so that they will, when they start taking calculus in Czech or biology in Hungarian, they're a little more prepared to be able to deal with those.
Okay. Rebecca, any advice for folks that are about to apply, what they should or not put on their resume and application?
Just be completely yourself. That's the best advice I have for you.
Well, I really want to thank all of you for coming into the studio today. Dan Dawson, Virginia Stonkis, Rifki.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Rebecca and Marceline. I really appreciate it. Are we missing anything? Anyone want to add anything?
No, I think you've covered most of it again. If you have no of a student or have a son or daughter who is interested, we really encourage you to apply.
And, do it.
Yeah, do it.
Do you have a website or something where folks should go as well?
We do. It's www.rotaryinternational.org. That's the one place I can go and find information. Or feel free to call Dan Dawson or I if you have any specific questions locally.
Great. Thanks again, everybody.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You are listening now to a cut from Martha Redbone. She's going to be playing September 30th at JDHS at 7 p.m. More information at thejack.org.
I laid me down upon a bed where love lay sleeping. I heard weeping, weeping. joys and this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Arena is now open for the 2015-2016 season with a 5-day schedule. More information at juno.org/parkrec/icerink or call 586-4540.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 21st, 2015. Scott Burton, your host here. Currently 47 degrees out there at the Juno Airport. Joining me now in the studio is Robin Thomas. She's the Development Director at Catholic Community Service. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. And also with her is John Gay Gein. He's president of the Francis C. Foundation, who is going to be contributing to CCS. We'll hear about that in a second. Part of Meals on Wheels, Catholic Community Service, longtime KRNN DJ. He wears many hats. John Gigging, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
It's nice to have you here. Robin, let's start with you. Tell us about CCS.
Yeah, thank you so much again for having us on. We greatly appreciate it. So CCS has been in Southeast Alaska we're on our 42nd year of service here in Alaska. We have 165 employees. We operate currently on about an $8 million a year budget, having over 75 employees out there supporting the mission of CCS as well, which is to strengthen individuals and families in Southeast Alaska with dignity, care, and compassion. We have three major divisions. We have our Hospice and Home Care of Juno division, we have our Children and Family Services, and then our largest division is our Southeast Senior Services.
Okay. What is probably the most visible of those three, and where is it? How can we visualize?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. Our largest division is Southeast Senior Services, and I think that's the one that people probably see out in the community the most. They're probably not aware of it as much. We have the senior centers in Yakutat, Skagway, Haines, Juneau, Hoonah, Angoon, Sitka, Cake, Wrangell, Craig, Kloak, Ketchikan.
And where's the one in Juneau, remind us?
It's actually on 10th, right across from the bridge in the
Mountain View.
The Mountain View Center over there.
Okay. All right. Sounds like you have a lot going on.
Yeah, we do. And we also have the caravan service here in Juneau. We have the Bridge Adult Day Program under Southeast Senior Services. Hospice and Home Care of Juneau is a pretty big program as well, and one that people identify with well. I think our most hidden secret is our Children and Family Services that people probably aren't aware of as much. And there's a lot of confidential client information that we're trying to protect because we are working with vulnerable children. We have the Child Advocacy Center helping children that have been abused from the very initial investigation all the way through prosecution. We have the the Behavioral Health Program, which helps children through clinical services. And then we have our child care assistance program.
Okay. John, you're here today mostly representing the Francis C. Foundation. Is that right?
Well, it's the Benito and Francis C. Gagin Foundation. It's my parents' foundation.
All right. And what is it about CCS that garnered your support?
Well, what is it? Like I said, I've been working with them in two capacities for a number of years. And from my view, CCS is the most important nonprofit in town because of all of the things that they do. I had heard, I have friends that work for CCS, and I'd heard that they had gotten into a little bit of financial difficulties because with the drop-off of government support. You know, you haven't heard much from CCS because they really haven't had to do much fundraising because they've managed to cover their expenses through what they get from the services they provide, but that's changing radically. So we're covering that. My foundation just made a matching grant of $12,500 to cover the behavioral health program because that was in danger of disappearing, I think.
Yeah, and we just recently met that match as about a week ago. And then also, you know, John and Cindy and their family foundation have been big supporters of CCS for multiple years. During this holiday season, they've offered to extend another $50,000 match.
Right. Wow. We did a $75,000 match last year because of the difficulties that they were finding themselves in. And that's behind them now, I think. I mean, the problems aren't resolved.
I think that John does bring a really good point in that that not just CCS, but a lot of nonprofits here in Alaska have been heavily funded by government sources, and those funds are decreasing. So we're going to be reaching out to individual donors more and more asking for that support. So, you know, the number one reason that people don't give is because they haven't been asked. And today, as a representative of CCS, we are here to ask for support. You know, we have the PFDs being paid out on October 1st. That amount was announced today for $2,072. And that's the start of our campaign, you know. Come October 1st, please feel free to visit our website or give us a call directly and make a donation to CCS.
Are you registered as Pick, Click, Give?
We are registered with Pick, Click, Give. We are partners with United Way. So there are a lot of ways to give. The deadline for Pick, Click, Give, well, usually when people do that, is for January, February, March when they're registering for their PFD. So this is kind of another opportunity. Once you get the payout, you have the opportunity, again, to contribute to a local nonprofit.
And what would be the best way for somebody to do that?
They can visit our website, ccsjuno.org, or they can call us directly at 907-463-6100.
Okay. Robin, what's on your radar going into the holiday season here?
Our biggest fundraiser that we're going to have is Light Up a Life, where we have a Christmas tree at the mall, and it's an opportunity to support Hospice and Home Care of Juneau. It's our largest fundraiser for them, and then we'll just be continuing to be on the radio shows talking about our certain programs maybe a little bit more in depth. So our Meals on Wheels program, for example, our Juneau Senior Nutrition Program, or our Child Advocacy Center, so that people can understand those programs a little bit more, and then just continuing to send out appeals to the public.
John, you've participated in Meals on Wheels as one example.
Yeah, I've been doing that for 12 years now.
As a volunteer?
As a volunteer.
Are you looking for Meals on Wheels volunteers, for example?
Yeah, we're always looking for volunteers. I mean, Okay. Volunteerism is the heart of philanthropy. So CCS will take any volunteers at any point in time.
What's that like for you, John? How does your day go when you're doing that?
It takes me about, I do two routes. It takes me about an hour and a half, and I pick the meals up and I go deliver them. And, you know, most of the time I just drop the meals off, but occasionally, you know, I'll chat with somebody. And I think one of the important things for Meals on Wheels is that somebody visits to make sure that everybody's all right, because Meals on Wheels is, in theory, limited to shut-ins, right?
They're for clients who are homebound.
Okay, so Meals on Wheels. What are some other examples how people can volunteer, Robin?
I'm always looking for volunteers to write thank you letters to our donors. We have the Light Up a Life fundraiser coming up, and I need people to stuff envelopes and help sort the mail. I need volunteers at the mall for selling the ornaments and hanging them on the tree.
Okay, and again, they should go to, what's your website?
CCSJuno.org, or call us directly at 463-6100.
And remember, any donation you make will be doubled.
Yeah, yeah, thanks to your foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Robin Thomas and John Gagin, thank you for coming on the show today. Are we missing anything?
No, again, I want to thank John and Cindy Gagin and the Benito and Francis C. Gagin Foundation for their great support to CCS. And again, taking the opportunity to match your donation today.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 21st of September, 2015. Some anniversaries in the world of publishing. The most famous, most reprinted newspaper editorial published on this day, 1897, the Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus column in the New York Sun in response to a letter from an 8-year-old girl in New York City. Is there a Santa Claus? The reporter Francis Church wrote his famous reply to little Virginia O'Hanlon, saying, "He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias." Virginia lived at 115 West 95th Street in New York, and she grew up to be a schoolteacher in New York City. 1970, on this date, the New York Times came out with a new section called the Op-Ed page, opposite the editorial page, devoted to the columns of outside writers. It's the birthday of the man who created Penguin Books, Sir Alan Lane, born Bristol, England, 1902. 1935, he was waiting for a train, looking for something to read on the train. All he could find was magazines and reprints of Victorian novels, and he came up with the idea of publishing low-quality volumes of great contemporary fiction, hoping to democratize literature. It's the birthday of Herbert George Wells, H.G. Wells, born Brumley, England, 1866, one of the fathers of modern science fiction, who wrote The Time Machine, The Island of Dr. Moreau, and The War of the Worlds. H.G. Wells, a socialist with a strong interest in biology. He died just before his 80th birthday, having lived long enough to see much of the future he had imagined in the real world. And it's the birthday of Savonarola, Girolamo Savonarola, born in Ferrara, Italy, 1452, the great idealist who joined the Dominican monks, preached against the Medici family in Florence, preached against the corruption of the Catholic Church, which got him in trouble with the corrupt Pope Alexander VI, and at the age of 46, Savonarola was arrested, tortured, and executed by hanging, and his ashes scattered in the Arno River. Here's a poem for today by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, entitled Curfew. Solemnly, mournfully, dealing its dole, the curfew bell is beginning to toll. Cover the embers and put out the light. Toil comes with the morning and rest with the night. Dark grow the windows and quenched is the fire. Sound fades into silence. All footsteps retire. No voice in the chambers, no sound in the hall. Sleep and oblivion reign over all. The book is completed and closed like the day, and the hand that has written it lays it away. Dim grow its fancies, forgotten they lie, Like coals in the ashes, they darken and die. Song sinks into silence. The story is told. The windows are darkened. The hearthstone is cold. Darker and darker, the black shadows fall. Sleep and oblivion reign over all. Curfew, a poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com, and by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Broadcast support for KTOO is provided in part by Greg Fisk, candidate for mayor of Juneau in the October 6th municipal election. Paid for by Greg Fisk for mayor.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, September 21st, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and I have been joined in the studio now by members of the Daughters of the New Moon. Katja, welcome to the show. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
And also Kalira, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Scott.
Katja, take us back to 1985 when you started Daughters of the New Moon, and tell us why you wanted to do that.
Well, Scott, we had a troupe here in Juneau, and we really adored the dance. I have to take you back to, like, 1973,
okay.
When I saw my first Middle Eastern dancer at a place in Sacramento, California. I always loved to dance, but look at me. I'm not a ballerina. I'm not built to be a ballerina. The lady I saw in Sacramento was tall and statuesque. There were no corners anywhere on that lady, and she danced for 20 minutes, doing what I know now as a full 20-minute nightclub routine, and she was beautiful. It was the most beautiful dance I had ever seen in my life, and I just had to learn how to do it. So I moved to Juneau, Alaska in 1973.
The center of Middle Eastern dance.
Absolutely. And as luck would have it, Middle Eastern dance became a fad in this country in 1976. And Juneau Community Schools started offering a class in 1976. And I signed up. And the dancer I took classes from in 1976 had one class from Juneau Community Schools. And since then, I have taken many classes through Juneau Community Schools, traveled to Sacramento, traveled to San Francisco, traveled to Seattle, traveled to New York, Turkey, and all of Egypt when it was safe. I love the dance. And in 1983, I stand corrected, we formed the Daughters of the New Moon. And I will present you right now with a picture taken by Ed Johnson, who is a photographer out of Gig Harbor, of the Daughters of the New Moon, taken earlier this month. That is the current troupe.
Beautiful. Okay. Kalira, tell us how you got involved.
Well, I got involved when I was... Well, I got inspired, I guess, when I was a teenager, and they were, the troupe was rehearsing in the community schools, and we had a class right after, and so we would peer in the windows, and we'd watch all these beautiful ladies dancing and rehearsing and learning from each other. And years later, when I managed to find time between college classes, I got to take lessons and join the troupe very shortly thereafter. It's just like Katja says, it's a beautiful dance and it's very inviting. And, you know, if you don't have a partner who likes to perform with you or even social dance with you, rather, you know, it's nice to have just a dance that you can do by yourself and not look like you're dancing with a ghost.
Okay. And this question goes to either of you. We don't have a ton of time, but could you sort of give us Middle Eastern Dance 101? I've heard terms like belly dancing, but I know there are a lot of very specific dances. Can you give us the brief synopsis on that?
Well, belly dance comes from the Chicago World's Fair, probably about 1884 or thereabouts. Saul Bloom was going broke with his fair, and he brought the Middle Eastern village and started having some dancers perform. And compared to what we wear today, these ladies wore several layers of clothing. But he built it in such a way during a Victorian time when you did not say leg, excuse me, you covered your table so your legs did not show. You ate a drumstick or dark meat. You did not, you know, you don't mention body parts. So he called it belly dancing. And at 10 cents a piece, he brought men in to watch the dance while ladies were served tea in a separate room because it wouldn't be appropriate for ladies to see this. And he got rich. The appropriate term, the term that we like to hear, is either Rakshaki or Oriental dance. But many people in the United States don't understand what you're talking about. If you say Oriental dance, they think you're going to appear in a kimono. But the Middle Eastern people do consider themselves an Oriental people, and Oriental dance or Rakshaki is the proper descriptive term for the dance.
We're here also to talk about our workshop, so this is a good lead-in. One of our classes, or the workshops, is Turkish Oriental or Oriental dance. So again, that ties back. You know, Rakshaki is Arabic, and then Oriental dance being the Turkish equivalent term. So again, that's more accepted, but again, American audiences, Middle Eastern dance, belly dance, that's the term they're going to know.
Okay, and can you give us the details on you have several workshops coming up, it looks like.
We do. So it starts this Thursday, September 24th. We're going to learn Shiftatelli, and there's lots of different varieties of Shiftatelli around, and so we are very interested in learning the Turkish version, or at least a Turkish version, because I'm sure there are many varieties of country dance, there are many varieties of Shiftatelli. And the other Turkish ones we're going to learn. Karşılama is one we're dancing on Saturday at, I think it's 12:30. And these are, again, folkloric dance. They're meant to be danced. This is meant to be danced as a group, although it has been done by individuals. Karşılama is a fun one because it's actually danced to a 9-8 rhythm. So you can't just dance 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it stops. You have to reset your brain a little bit. You know, it's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So I think it'll be, a little brain teaser for people who show up. But again, these are dances that were done, for families, by families, your aunts and your uncles and your grandchildren and your grandmas, they all dance together, all these dances. So if you're interested, you should stop by.
Okay. If somebody wants more information, where should they go?
DaughtersOfTheNewMoon.com, where you can find us on Facebook. We have all the information posted in both places.
Okay. Katja, here we are. It started in 1983. I guess it's 2016. What is that, 30 years?
Over 30 years.
Wow.
If you figure I was 5 years old at the time, it all works.
You must be very proud.
Of my daughters, yes, I am.
Yeah, okay. Thank you both for coming on. Katja, you brought a CD that is going to take us out. Can you set it up for us?
Certainly. In 1984, I went on tour with a gentleman who has taught Turkish dance workshops here in Juneau for the Juneau Folk Ensemble, Bora Uzkuk, if you can pronounce the O's with the two little dots over them. Bora did take me on a month-long tour around the entire country of Turkey, which was very interesting. And he's got several albums out, and this is one of them.
Great. Thanks, you too. Anything? We're missing anything?
If you're interested in belly dance or oriental dance, we are having a beginning class starting on October 5th, and you can find information on our website about that also.
Daughters of the New Moon.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, you too.
All right. Thanks for having us in.
Comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, offering HydroFit every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 p.m. until 7:30, Aqua Aerobics Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. until noon, and Stretch Aquatics Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45. Fall swim schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/rec/pool. More information at 586-5325.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 21st, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. And my last guests on the show today, they're here to talk about the Municipal Candidate Forum at the Assembly Chambers this Wednesday night at 7 p.m. They're both on the board of the League of Women Voters, George Brown and Chris Neamey. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to have you both here. George, you're a board member. Should we start with you to have you give us a little background about the league?
Yeah, I've been on the board a little longer than Chris, although I'm new to league history. Just briefly about the league in Alaska, there are four leagues. Juno is probably, I think Anchorage is the oldest, but Juno's been active for at least three or four decades. And the things we do year-round in Juno, the primary purpose of the league is voter registration from a nonpartisan basis. And so we have a number of events for voter registration throughout the year. The most visible is on July the 4th. We have a float and we have a banner and we have voter registrars at the Jack and over in Douglas. We have gone to other places in town like the Marine Park, other times at the Jack. We have gone to both the high schools in May when the students are, that's the time to get people to register to vote and participate. And we've gone out to UAS a number of times. But probably the highlight for most of the league members is being there for voter registration at the naturalization ceremony in the federal building. And Chris and I were there this year, and we don't have time to tell you the heartwarming stories of how people are so happy to become citizens of the United States. Now, one of the things we want to emphasize is we're going to have a wine tasting. This is a fundraiser for the local league. It's going to be at the Hangar Ballroom on Friday, October the 2nd, from 5 to 7:30. And you can go on our website at junolwv.org and get all the information. And you also, if you're interested, you can become a member of the league. And I've given you the number. We want people to call mine and my wife's home. Phone is 364-2726, or go to the website, because we want to, and particularly enlist newer, younger members, and it's for men, too. So here's why the League of Women Voters is vital to democracy. 10 reasons. They are the gears of democracy as the leading promoters of nonpartisan voter registration. They are the oil of democracy to keep the election gears going forward. It took U.S. women over 70 years of deliberate campaigning and protest to get the right to vote, following which they established the League of Women Voters. Women have been the largest and longest suffering human group for not just centuries, but millennia. They still chafe under the discrimination of disrespect and unequal pay at both the social and legal levels, and we still have yet to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. Mothers and grandmothers are the vanguard of doing most all of the grimy, sweat-producing daily work of cleaning, cooking, working, organizing, and assuring family and social schedules and events go on for the hard work of sustaining democracy. They're also the ones who clean up the mess after war. Girls, women, mothers, and grandmothers have been adding to the multiple and amazing achievements of modern arts and science. They now make up a large contingent of university researchers, professors, legislators, local school board and municipal leaders, governors, and in some countries, presidents and prime ministers. League of Women Voters members and leaders practice equality. Men are active members and leaders. While their leadership failed to get the U.S. to join the League of Nations in the 1920s, the League of Women Voters was invited to help in the foundation of the United Nations in the 1940s. The social and legal positions of the National League of Women Voters reflect and put into practice all of the values in our nation's Bill of Rights. And finally, all humankind is still here on our precious planet Earth because of the work of mothers and grandmothers throughout history. Thank you.
Thank you, George. So among the many hats that the organization wears and the things that it stands for, it's going to be organizing this municipal candidate forum on Wednesday. Is that right, Chris?
Yes, that's correct.
And what can we expect there?
Well, we are going to start off with a meet and greet the candidates at 6:30. So we'd like to invite people to be there at 6:30 to enjoy some coffee and snacks and actually get to meet the candidates in person. The people will also be able to write out some questions for the candidates, and these questions will be asked of the candidates during the forum. The forum will actually start at 7 p.m., and it will start with the assembly candidates. And there will be a moderator who will ask the questions, they will be timed. And then at about 7 o'clock, then they will, excuse me, at 8 o'clock, they will have the candidates for the school board. Okay. And they will also be asked questions that will be written out by people from the audience. So this is a real participation opportunity to meet and to ask questions of all the candidates that you would like to know. And I just want to remind people that that it is very important to vote in the election, that we've had a number of elections in Alaska that have been won by very few votes. And in fact, in Bering Strait School District, they had to decide the winner by a flip of the coin because the voting was actually a tie vote. So please get out there, support the candidates, and please vote.
We only have about a minute left, minute and a half maybe. Do we have time to run over the candidates really quick?
Okay. Yes. We have, for mayor, we have Greg Fisk and Merrill Sanford running. And in District 1, we have Lauren Jones for the Assembly. For District 2, we have Dixie Hood, Jerry Nankervis, and Jason Puckett running. That, again, is District 2 candidates. For the school board candidates, we have 5, and we'll get to select 3 of the 5. That is Jason Hart, Josh Keaton, Emil Mackey III, Jeff Redman, and Andrea Andy Story. And we thank all the candidates for their participation and for running for office.
And you can meet them, talk to them, ask them questions this Wednesday night at the Assembly Chambers at 7 p.m. And if you can't make it downtown, you can listen to it right here on KTOO.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. So thank you both very much, Chris, Nimi, George Brown, for coming on the show today. Anything else you want to add?
Thank you for the time and for promoting democracy.
You're welcome. Thank you. Tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, we'll talk with Matt Musselwhite from the Gatineau Humane Society about upcoming events. Steve Kosas from the Marie Drake Planetarium will be here with a preview of the Tuesday presentation on dark energy, dark matter, and the fate of the universe. We'll learn about local observances of high holy services. We'll talk with Sarah Radke Brown and Shona Osterhout about the 8th graders' art excursion to Othello. As far as the weather goes, it's 47 degrees at the Juneau Airport. Tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, patchy fog late, lows around 39. Tuesday, increasing clouds, patchy fog in the morning, slight chance of rain showers in the afternoon, highs around 54.